Good afternoon. I call Human Services Finance Committee to order. Members, we have quorum present. Members, please have your seats so that we can begin the committee tasks. First of all, I just wanted to request the approval of minutes for April 2nd, 2024.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would be delighted to approve the minutes for April 2nd, 2024.
Vice Chair Banner moves the approval of minutes from April 2nd, 2024. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed, say nay. The minutes for April 2nd, 2024 are now approved. That, members, we have our first bill, House File 4366. Representative Edelson, welcome to the committee. I will move that House File 4366 be laid over. And I also see that you have got a DE3 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have a DE3, and I'd ask the committee to accept this, and then it will. This will actually replace the overall bill.
Absolutely. So this puts the bill in the shape the author wants. So any discussion on the D3?
Sure.
Representative Baker.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Pretty substantial amendment. Maybe give us a good explanation of to why kind of a major trim down maybe or a relook at this, because my name's on the bill too. I need to understand where we're going to this. Thank you.
Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Baker. So this reflects, so what we did initially with the overall bill was we took the task force and we took the task force report and we essentially put everything in it because I wanted to just get a compilation of what the task force had recommended. Well, the goal was to have that fiscal noted. But as you know, things kind of run out of time here, and here we are. We're a week away from deadlines. And so we are really just going to take, we took out the parts that are running in other bills. So, for example, like the forensic examiners are moving in another, that will be in Chair Becker Finn's bill. The 1115 waiver, I know, Chair Knorr, you have that. So we took some of those things out. The rates were going to be huge, and we've already just received the preliminary fiscal report, so our fiscal note. So we took it down to what we really absolutely need this year in the stakeholder agreement, because, again, this is 18 stakeholders, and all of this is being worked on as a consensus bill, just like we did several years ago with competency attainment. So we could adopt this amendment, I'll speak to this as the overall bill.
So I move D3 amendment for Representative Edelson. Any discussion on the D3, Representative Baker?
So just to be clear, you're lightening up the load on this bill, so there's other pathways of others. I have my ACT language in here that is being removed. Currently, the rate increase has been removed from this bill, which really has a lot of heartburn for me. And I need to maybe ask the chair, because you will have a larger scale look at this, is what is the plan to make sure that we don't lose this focus? And peeling one out of a bill that I really do support what we're trying to do here, I need to know what the language and where the pathway is for these other important parts that are being taken out. So I'm not sure who I'm asking the question to, Mr. Chair or Representative Edelson, but that's my question.
I think I'll defer to Representative Edelson, who has worked on this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, so lots, again, the rate increases are going to be quite costly, and we have certain budget targets. There are other parts of this that we absolutely have to have. So when we're talking about, again, my hope is that we can adopt the DE3, and then I can speak to this overall issue, but we have, civil commitments have doubled in the last 10 years. They have doubled. And what we know is a crisis and an emergency is the fact that we do not have capacity at the state level. And so we need to build the capacity, which is what we have in this amendment here. We also immediately will be opening up 10 beds for hospitals to be on that wait list. Right now, I mean, I think you've been in other committees, Representative Baker, where we have, in one instance at HCMC, there is a patient that has been there for 3 years, has assaulted staff 160 plus times. And so that we, right now we're prioritizing people that are civilly committed to go to the state facilities. But we also have a problem in terms of just the doubling and the pressures. We need capacity overall, but we also need to get some of the people that are in hospitals opened up. So to have rates in this when we have this other pressing issue, it's just too many things. We really need to go down to scale it back to what we really need to do, which is an absolute emergency, which is make sure that we're passing priority admissions this year and respecting all of the work of all of the 18 stakeholders.
Mr. Chair, finally, I get it. I understand it. There's a lot of emergency priorities right now that didn't get done last year. And this is one of them. And this is one that we got to fix. We got to do it. We have to get people out of the hospital beds. 600 plus days is unthinkable. But also so is the reimbursements. And so are other things that were part of this. So I won't belabor this, Mr. Chair. I want to get moving on this as well. Let's talk about this more. I'm concerned about the pathways when folks, you know, that are also working on areas like this have a lot of concern and buy-in and investment in this to make sure that they're going to continue to move alongside. So we'll have these conversations. And again, I don't want to get in the way of this, what's going to be moving, but I just want to make sure that we keep talking about it. Thank you.
Lee Newbern.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Chair Edelson, and Representative Edelson, I'm wondering if you do have any idea what the blank appropriations will come to?
Mr. Chair, we have a preliminary fiscal note. If you can kind of go refer to that. Again, I just got that just right before I came in. So I just would refer to that as being a starting point.
We do have a preliminary because it has not yet been, it's not yet an official fiscal note, so we are waiting for it to be official fiscal note. But you have the numbers in front of you. Lee Newbern.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess my question for you is for you, Mr. Chair. I think we all assumed. I mean, we've got a pretty significant budget target in this committee, and I think that our members kind of assumed that this is likely where it would go. And so I'm wondering if you can give us some idea. We've got a pretty hefty budget target. What are the goals for this committee at this point?
Lydia Burnley, I appreciate the question. I think next week we're going to be having conversation about the governor's recommendation, and then we will have to deliberate on how we spend that small budget target that we have. As you've noted multiple times, we've got a structural imbalance in the budget, so we will have to be more deliberate in how we spend what we've been allocated to spend for this session.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate that. And I look forward to those conversations, and I also appreciate the recognition that we've got a problem going forward. That, I mean, you know, again, we call it a structural imbalance, but that means deficit. And deficit means in the future we don't have enough money, and anything we spend now creates a problem on that front. And here we are with this bill, which, again, all of us agree is extraordinarily important. And here we are after spending $30 billion last year trying to figure out how to pay for essential services. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any further discussions on the DE? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. The DE amendment is now adopted. To your bill, Representative Edelson, as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. So House Bill 4366, as amended, is the priority admissions law. It's more commonly known as the 48-hour law, which was enacted in 2013, requiring the Commissioner of Human Services to prioritize individuals being admitted from county jails to the state-operated treatment facilities. So last session, we had passed a task force of 18 members, which included this amazing sheriff right here, hospital staff, director, people from direct care and treatment, NAMI, community mental health, the omnibus person for mental health, counties, county attorneys, commitment defense, a member of with lived experience, the chief of psychiatry, a chief of psychiatry, commissioner of DHS, Jody Harpstead, and Minnesota's attorney general, Keith Ellison, was also the chair of that. So the priority admission report was made it very clear that not one system stakeholder could meet the needs that are being demanded. Again, I had mentioned earlier in my comments Civil commitments have increased dramatically. They've increased by 50% over the last 10 years. We do not have capacity in the state of Minnesota. So what it's leading to, members, is people being stuck in our jails for longer. It means that people are in our hospitals, in times where they're just not staffed. And a hospital is also, while a jail is not a place to be to get help you need, a hospital is not also built for this, you guys. Not a hospital in the way that we're currently using it. The committee members really worked hard. What you will see before you, as we did the DE3, is a reflection of work that we have been coming together for twice a week, sometimes three times a week. We have been negotiating, and I want to applaud all of the stakeholders. Everybody is coming with their true, honest self of what they can do. So before you, what is left over in this bill are the bare necessities of what we absolutely need in order to move this issue forward. So I'm going to list seven things that this bill includes that are really critical. So it relieves counties of cost of care for civilly committed individuals waiting transfer to state-run facilities. It forms a joint incident collaboration group to help actively facilitate discharge patients from DCT patients to open up bed space and capacity. It creates an engagement service grant pilot for counties and community health centers to provide early engagement services. It creates a limited exception to immediately approve 10 patient beds for hospitals specifically. It creates a pilot program to administer mental health medications in jails and other billable health care costs related to that. And that is something I'm sure that the sheriff is going to talk about, but jails really need help with this. We also know Sheriff Wilkes, has been working. We're having trouble finding providers that will do that medication. And so be very clear, this is not a partisan issue. This is something that we all need to work together on to address. And then just the last thing that it really does is in a vital part of this bill is it immediately begins to increase capacity for direct care and treatment, so our state facilities, by 10 to 20% to ensure that we are clearing the congestion that we're seeing in our hospitals and our jails. And this is all throughout the state of Minnesota. And with that, Mr. Chair, I would like to go to my testifiers.
Thank you so much. The first testifier is Sheriff Welk. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. My name is Brian Welk. I'm a sheriff with Cass County Sheriff's Office, and I am here representing all 87 sheriffs through the Minnesota Sheriff's Association. Also want to thank Representative Edelson for taking on this task. It's been a lot of tough conversation. We all know that it's an important issue. We see the increase in our jails by twofold, if not more, and that's the ones we know about. And we know that if we make a plan today to build for capacity, that's 6 years before we have people actually in a facility. So we have to act now. We support the pilot project with medications, and what that helps is we recognize we have them in our jails that need help and we're not doing anything. So with this project would allow us to get medications to people sooner in that 6 year time frame that we absolutely need to deal with this. And this has been an ongoing issue since 2009. We've had six reports from six different workforce groups or task force, and we have to act. It's crisis, it's emergent, you all know that, and we're just here begging for your help. Because now there's nothing more we can do but rely on you. So thank you for allowing me to testify today. Again, thank you, Representative Edelson, for taking this on, and thank you for all of you and for your attention.
Thank you so much for your service, Sheriff. And also, we have discussed the reentry waiver, as Representative Edelson has stated. I think that was something that all the sheriffs came to us and said that is the number one priority.
Absolutely.
So thank you
thank
so much
you for that.
Thank you. The next person on the list is County Commissioner Clark.
Yes. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and
good
members.
Afternoon. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Yes, I'm Terrell Clark. I currently serve as the board chair for the Stearns County Board of Commissioners. I'm here today on behalf of AMC, MAXA, and MICA, and I just raced down here from St. Cloud and Palmer Township, so I'm still out of breath a little bit. I appreciate this opportunity to testify. I want to thank Representative Edelson once again. As Sheriff Welk said, there's been a lot of ongoing work on this. This is really tough stuff. This is hard situations for the people involved, and it really is a public safety and a humanitarian issue. For AMC, our absolute top priority this year is increasing capacity. And it's a down payment. It's not going to be a one-time thing. It's been a long time since new investment's been in, and that's in part because this committee and others have so many important issues you're wrestling with. But if we're serious about making a difference, that needs to happen. You already heard that it's important in the jails. Jails are not mental health treatment centers. They should never become that. We could do some short-term work there. But both them and our hospital emergency departments are not the places for people to be waiting to get the treatment they need. So whether it's a community or whether it's a DCT, it's going to be very important this year to start seeing that happen. What we're really looking at, putting that 10 to 20% into numbers, is really about 40 beds and 40 beds. And as the sheriff said, it's going to take some time. So we're going to keep working together, including on that waiver reentry, to be making that difference moving forward. I want to make sure I do reinforce that making any change to the criteria without adding capacity is actually just going to make the situation worse and harder. So want to continue, we all together want to continue to do this. As Representative Edelson said, this is really urgent. And Mr. Chair, there is one other provision in this bill that would like to highlight, if you have a moment for me to do that.
Yes, please. Go ahead. Go
okay. On. Mostly because I know there's another bill coming up that I could speak to later if you'd rather. And this is another key county priority. This is the situation where somebody does not meet medical criteria. Right now, county levy pays 100% of the cost of treatment at DCT when an individual is determined to no longer meet that required level of care for their current placement. And that includes when the next appropriate placement can only be another state-operated bed, but there's no bed available due to the lack of capacity in our DCT system. We have no control over how or when the individual is moved between the state and the facilities. So a key part of this bill is to try to make sure that counties are not depleting county property tax so that otherwise could go towards mental health treatment. Right now, the money that is charged returns to the general fund. So think about it, county levy gets returned to the general fund, not back to DHS to do something else good, but just to the general fund and not back to our taxpayers. And so that's a real key issue. It has been for a long time. This particular bill would ensure those payments get returned to the counties for reinvestment in the mental health services. Certainly it can be available for questions. Very much appreciate the work. No, you do not have huge targets, but whatever you can be doing now is just critical to moving forward. So thank you.
Thank you so much, Commissioner. The next person is Danny Eckert, if you are around. Please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Danny Eckert with the Minnesota Hospital Association. I'm here in support of House File 4366 as amended. I want to thank Representative Edelson for pulling us all together multiple times over the last months to get us to this point. And although there have been compromises made, there's a lot that we still support in this bill. The context for where we show up on this conversation is that in 2023, patients across the state spent roughly 195,000 avoidable days waiting for the appropriate level of care to become available. This is due to many reasons, but unfortunately it comes at a time where admissions to state-operated treatment facilities is at an all-time low, and those are admissions from community hospitals. So when someone or a Minnesotan should be treated in a community state-operated treatment program, that often requires disproportionate levels of care in the community hospital. Often these patients require strict security measures that require units to be closed, and that impacts the access to care that others have and need in the community setting. So we strongly support the 10-person exception to get civilly committed patients out of the community hospitals into state-operated treatment program. We also support the advancement of the admissions priority admissions criteria in this bill. Although it doesn't apply to the full population of civilly committed people, including those in the community hospital, having that criteria moves forward is a great test case to understand how that works better. And you can expect us to continue to work with the next author and with the other stakeholders to ensure that community hospitals can be included in those priority admissions. We also support the other aspects of this bill, like the early involuntary engagement pilot program that increases preventative care services in the community. And we also support the increase of capacity. Obviously, I haven't seen the new fiscal note, but that, needless to say, please understand that if we can increase capacity at state-operated treatment programs, that is a net positive for all. So, yeah, thank you. And with that, again, we support this bill. Thank you, Representative Evelson. Thank you, everyone, for working on this. Stand for any questions. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you so much for your testimony. The next person I have on the list is Sue Abdeholden. If you can come to the testify table, please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Member Sue Abdeholden, Executive Director of NAMI Minnesota, and thank you for the opportunity to testify today. And I do really want to thank Representative Edelson for basically not letting us out of the room until we came to some agreements on this bill. You know, when the 48-hour bill passed, it was to make sure that people with serious mental illnesses didn't languish in jail after they were committed. And it's important to note that people are actually in jail for months before they're ever committed. And for the first few years, it worked. But then we had an increasing number of people who were deemed incompetent to stand trial and committed. And we also now have an increasing number of people in Minnesota who are struggling with their mental health. So with increased needs and increased number of people committed, the only people basically who can be admitted into a state-operated program are people from the jails. We have a small number of people in community hospitals who really do need to be at Anoka. They've been in a hospital without access to fresh air for over a year, and we've had units take beds offline due to their severe symptoms, which then have created increased boarding in the emergency rooms. So the task force was created to really develop recommendations for how we could address this impossible situation. And I think the bill does reflect our recommendations. We do need to expand direct care and treatment so more people can get into Anoka, a CBHH, or the security hospital. We do need to provide more treatment to people in jails, especially injectables. And we need to actually go upstream and prevent so many people from going into jail in the first place by funding voluntary engagement. And I will note that we did take the feedback from the last hearing, and so we're making sure that it's culturally informed engagement services as well. And then having the new criteria for priority admissions also makes sense. How long has someone been on the wait list? What's the intensity of treatment needed? What's the safety of the individual and others? And we need to, of course, combine that. I do want to mention that Representative Fisher's bill, we're calling it the mini bus for mental health, House File 3495, actually has the issues addressed in terms of the ACT team, increased rates, and a whole lot of the other issues that had been in this bill. So I just wanted to answer Representative Baker's question about that. And then I think it is important that we approve an exception to the priority admissions law to allow at least 10 people from our community hospitals to get in. While the task force agreed on many things, there's one big issue that remains, whether we keep a specific time period in which someone needs to be transferred out of the jail once committed. So we are going to keep meeting for another year. And I want to be clear from the task force perspective that we can't resolve this issue without funding. I'll also mention that this is an issue across the country. Actually, Washington State was sued and is handing over $400 million in fines, but they still can't meet the deadlines because they don't have open beds. Georgia just last month stated the average wait time for restoration services is 275 days due to the shortage of beds, and their bill would provide actually competency services in jails. I think that what we've done as part of this task force is proposed a comprehensive plan to address this issue, not simply a Band-Aid, and I urge your support. Thank you.
Thank you so much. I think Mark Hughes, you wanted to testify on this bill? Please come to the testify table.
I'll say it in about 30 seconds. I'm Mark Hughes. I want to support Rep. Edelson on this bill and Sue Abderholden. As we've known in Minnesota, without drawing too many pictures, mental illness is a big problem in the state of Minnesota, and it's getting bigger. I've had my own experience. I took care of a stepmother for 11 years with Alzheimer's, so I guess I firsthand, and I'm no hero. But I just wanted to let you know that at some point it affects everybody. So this is an issue we need to listen to. We need to take the right steps and do the right thing for Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Just wanted to ask if we have any member discussions. Representative Zelesnicka.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative Edelson, for your bill. I know you're passionate about solving a very complicated problem, and I too have spent a lot of time listening to the Hennepin County weekly information and other parts of the state. And you know, I think it's just monumentally frustrating to see the level of need. If I understood it right, we have 50% higher civil commitments. We have people, so we're talking about 10 beds in a state with 5.6 million people. And I sit here and just think this committee, somehow we failed. I mean, we had a $17.5 billion surplus, and we're talking just a drop, a little tiny drop to try to relieve pressure on something that affects every one of our counties, every one of our communities, every one of our hospitals, every one of our jails, and we couldn't figure this out. So I say it with all due respect, because I know you've worked tremendously hard on this. And this is you know, increasing capacity is absolutely critical. And then figuring out a long-term game to this is going to be, you know, it's not even an option. It has to happen. And now we have a budget, a structural imbalance, which is a deficit. And so it's going to come to this committee to say, okay, which things are we going to cut to assure that we have mental health needs and civilly committed needs and people in hospital, and we have pediatric kids that haven't seen the light of day for years in our hospitals. And Representative Hicks and I have talked about it. They're in North Dakota. So this is not Minnesota nice. And so I just am going to say it's extremely disappointing. It's extremely frustrating to see that this state is in this situation. And we have a lot of work to do, because the counties cannot do this. The hospitals cannot do this. They were never designed to play the role they're playing. And we can do better. We have to do better. So I commend you for what you've done, and want to just acknowledge that this is a drop in the bucket, a drop in the bucket. And this bucket has got the hole in it that's leaking out for us to fix, and it's not going away. And so we're going to be back at this table working for, it can't take years. I mean, when I hear 2009, from sheriffs that we've had a concern noted, this committee never had $17.5 billion till last year. Never. And here we are leaving the sheriffs and the hospitals in this situation. And so we have work to do. I'm willing to do everything we need to do, but this isn't on Rep. Edelson. This is on all of us. And we need to do better, because the issue is not going away. Thank you.
Lee Newbrinley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm wondering, I'm reviewing, and first of all, again, thank you, Representative Edelson. I mean, again, I don't think there's any question anywhere around the table how critical this is. There's no question about that. I'm wondering, you know, I totally understand the issue of capacity, right? And I think, as I review the, and I get it's not the final, but as I look at the preliminary fiscal note, it looks like the estimated costs for capacity our let's see, our 47 million and 48 million, maybe? Am I reading that correctly?
Mr. Brett.
Mr. Chair, Representative New Brindley, those are in the tails. There, I will point out, is another 86 million and 25 on that line you're looking at.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you. I mean, it seems like capacity is so critical in this, and I'm wondering if anyone from the department is here who can talk to, you know, I mean, capacity is one thing. I mean, we know that the space is there, right? I mean, beds are available if we can staff them, and I'm wondering if we can get some sense from the department of where we are right now. Like, you know, how many employees are we down in DCT right now? You know, can we fill the capacity that we currently have and that is budgeted for? Are we going to be able to meet this? And I want to just preface this by saying I asked this question because it is a really expensive line item. Mm-hmm. And if we can't actually increase capacity like we need to right now because we can't meet our current capacity demands, perhaps we need to direct that funding to different portions of the bill to ensure that we are, that we're actually getting the bang for our buck that we're looking for in trying to solve this problem.
Mr. Chair, yeah, thank you. And Representative New Brindley, agree with everything you just said. So, and I think it's Ms. Bailey, right? Okay. She can speak to some of this. I mean, some of it is, it will be, I think there's some costs for building a new facility, so I will let her speak to this.
Director Bailey, please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Chair and members of the committee. I'm Elise Bailey, Budget Director for the Department of Human Services. So to answer your initial question on how much increasing bed capacity in this bill costs, Mr. Berg was correct in the total sum, but also there's another line in the fiscal note where we're taking in revenue from different sources when somebody's receiving care in our facilities. And so the net cost is about $83 million in the first year and $34.3 million in the second and $30 million in the tails going forward. What's included in those numbers, it is a mixture of staffing and building costs. And so where we're at as the current status of DCT is that in order to increase bed capacity to the level of this bill, we don't have buildings that could adequately provide that level of care for folks. And so we're in this fiscal note, we have estimated the cost of constructing one building. And we're also renovating other buildings that we have to increase capacity in those locations. In addition to that, we are hiring staff to fully operate all the additional beds. I would note that in addition to these costs in this fiscal note, that new building that we're building, we would have to come back at a later date to have additional operating costs once that's fully constructed. So that isn't included in this fiscal note. And that would be between 40 to 60 million additional costs outside of the horizon of the fiscal note.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you for that. As a follow-up, I'm wondering, are you currently able to meet the staffing needs of current capacity?
Director Bailey?
Mr. Chair, a member, I could get the more detailed information for you. I know that we are at full capacity in most instances. The Children's CABS program, we could increase by another 8 beds if we were to get more staffing, and that is in the governor's recommendation that we'll be going over with you, I believe, next week. Unless we're shifting resources across our continuum, we're pretty much at full capacity, except for that instance that I'm aware of. But I can get double check with our staff to make sure that that's the most accurate response.
Lee Newbern.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other discussion from members? Representative Kinnell.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative Edelson. I do really care about this. Mental health is an issue that we're addressing in my community, but can I just ask some clarifying questions now that I look over, like, the new language? So my first question is on page one regarding the transition of how tribes are looked at. So they used to be, it looks like we're striking it from an eligible applicant and moving tribes to have to be part of a community partnership. I guess my only concern is because I know in this language 50% is going out to Greater Minnesota, which could include tribal nations, but we're kind of forcing tribal nations to have to be in a partnership where we're allowing counties to be eligible on their own and a government-to-government relationship status and sovereignty. I'd like to understand the thought process to that because it just seems like we're not actually setting it up equitably, and later in here it does mention like culturally inclusive responsive approaches. I'm wondering if there's somebody who can answer that question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Keeler, I think that is a good point. And I'm trying to remember who, we did have a discussion on this. And, oh, there we go. Thank you, Mr. Freeman. I'm like, who can I call out? Thank you.
Mr. Freeman, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Matt Freeman, Association of Minnesota Counties and Minnesota Association of County Social Service Administrators. So the language that's amended in this bill is around the mental health innovation grants. Those currently receive about $1 million from the does not meet medical criteria costs. And so the currently listed eligible, applicants, one of the requirements for them is to go through and obtain a letter of support from the local mental health authority, which is the county. So we are just adjusting that language. The existing applicants still need to partner or work through that county approval process under the existing structure. The goal was to streamline that process so it doesn't need to go through a county board, a formal letter, but that it would work on integrated those services and coordinating that between community partners and counties. These dollars, again, are county levy dollars that are paid for those folks that do not meet medical criteria. So it's county levy dollars going in, and we think it's important that counties are driving that investment in partnership with tribes, community providers, hospitals, and others to meet that community need. So, again, happy to answer other questions if that doesn't address your concerns.
Representative Kill.
I mean, is there anybody, you're here representing counties, so of course you're going to be on the side of the counties, right? Like, I don't love that answer, and to be honest, like, what we've been doing isn't helping, and if we look at the data, you know, like, a lot of our Native communities need support, and so I would caution us and maybe look at that to the author because I think that moves a little bit away what we're trying to do. So my next question is on page 3, line item 3.5, on the state-operated facilities and programs as Moorhead sits up against Fargo. I just want to be sure that if an individual is in a state-operated facility, that would count if they're in Fargo, but residents of Moorhead or Minnesota individuals, because in my community, that's the facility that they end up staying in because it's closest in proximity to our community. So I just want to make sure that my community wouldn't miss out on this opportunity because of the setup and the makeup of our medical structures. And then lastly, making sure that when we talk about the Department of Corrections, that includes juvenile detention centers as well, or is this just like 18 and up support mechanisms?
Did you want any response now, or just wanted to work with the stakeholders?
No, I'd like some answers if anybody can address that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill only addresses adults, and then Representative Keeler, I will have counties and a few others come and talk to you, maybe DHS as well, to just come and maybe Mrs. Abderholden to address that language on line 1.8. This only deals with adults. Children in, I mean, it's just like we did with competency attainment. You're dealing with different sections of law because we're talking about adults versus juveniles, and it requires two different approaches. And so with that, we are dealing with the adults in this bill.
Representative Kelly, any follow-up? All right. I think I have Representative Franson.
No.
Representative Kwan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And first to the previous representative, I think we need to have a general set of language that'll go across instead of trying to nitpick on a specific language in each bill. We should come together for some general language that affects local government and counties and tribes and looks at the cooperative, you know, some situations are cooperating or doing joint things with counties, and others it's more of a closed separate. So we should actually have a group sit down and come up with agreed upon working language across all the bills. So that, you know, I would help, but I don't have to help. I just think we need to do that in general so we don't repeat this. The other thing for the members, we keep hearing about addressing the results of either inadequacies in care and et cetera. We're hitting the results. We have to try and, as a committee, work on what are the causes? Why is there an increase? Are we missing needed supports in the schools for children, teenagers, et cetera, that would address and until it gets to a big problem? You know, we're trying to do a very complex bill here. I'm just keep in mind, how can we get to the source or decrease the problem instead of continually just addressing it? And thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Echoing a lot of what was said today, Representative Edelson, I knew you were going to carry this bill and try to do the best you could, get it to where it needs to do to get it to. I'm a co-author on it. I wish I maybe would have been engaged in some of the other stakeholder meetings because I would like to make sure that all voices or many are heard, but I appreciate your work on that. This is, again, my concern is, again, we've stripped this thing down because of the cost. I mean, this bill alone is three times what this target is in this committee. And I don't know what we're going to do because I don't think you can partially do this. That's the problem. So I know that people are going to figure out where the money is going to come from, but this is maybe a question to Mr. Berg, and that might be when you, in a second year of a biennium like this, I've been here for 10 years, I've never had this desire and need and kind of a freak out moment that I feel like I have right now, because mental health and this issue that everybody sitting around this table really believes in, we're woefully short, and we didn't do it last year like we probably should have. In your experience, Mr. Berg, when there's lots of money out there that has not been executed and committed in other areas, other agencies, I'll use my one example for DEED. $530 million was allocated to nonprofit workforce grants and things like that directly. They don't have barely 50% of that executed and committed yet. There's other dollars out there building up new programs that are not yet expended and moved. When you have a crisis that something comes up, has the government before sort of done shifts and changes that has been spent and, you know, claw that back? Is it a process? Has it ever happened? If it does, what is that like? Because the money was so heavy last year that what was spent here, but yet today we're dealing with some really big crisis points that we need to deal with. So, Mr. Berg, can you reflect on any options there that has ever been used before?
Mr. Berg.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I'm not sure I can do much to answer your question. I mean, certainly the legislature has the authority to make laws and change laws. Budget items that were put out last year could be changed, and there are, I'm sure, I can't think of anything off the top of my head, there are certainly examples in the past where the legislature has changed an existing budget. As to how much money might be unspent in other areas of the budget, I really can't comment on that, but it is, of course, the option of the legislature to change existing law.
Thank you, Mr. Berg, Mr. Chair. I know that that comes up to leadership and the legislative leaders. I understand that. I wanted to know if there was any examples or any time before, because this is truly something that I didn't want to come and spend anything this year, but the crisis only grows in this market, in this area. And if we don't get our reimbursements for substance use disorder places, we're not going to have treatment centers when we get our folks coming out of jail and incarcerations and our reentry programs. There's not going to be programs there to help those people. And so I'm worried that if we don't get our arms around this particular issue, and I know there's others, but I do hope that we somehow look at all the money that is not committed yet. And I'm more speaking now to really senior leadership and the majority. If there's ways of finding and clawing back money that was actually there, hasn't been committed, but we've got this other big inferno burning here, and I hope that we can make some shifts and changes, because I think that's our best chance, because the money's not there. We've got, anyway, that's enough. But I do want to thank Rep. Edelson again. This is a big lift, and there's other ones around it. We have to find the money. Thank you.
Representative Hicks.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative Edelson, for your work on this bill. I know how hard it is to get everybody together and find middle ground that's really meaningful. This is a really good first step. So I appreciate all of the work that you've done in this space. I do want to sort of zoom us out a little bit, too, because I hear things about what we did or we didn't do. And today we're hyper-focused on this end of the spectrum, right? And this is a really important end of the spectrum. When people get to civil commitment, we're all the way over here, right? But there is a lot of space all the way over here. And that starts with things like making sure that our waiver programs are funded, so when people are beginning to need services, because civil commitment isn't just SED, it isn't just mental health. There's three different types of civil commitment, and one of those is developmental disabilities civil commitment, right? And so making sure that we're funding our waivers and paying our staff on the front end so we don't get here, right? A lot of folks who end up in the civil commitment pathway are folks who have really struggle to maintain housing, and they struggle to maintain their supports in mental health services. So the funding we did in that space is really important on this end of the spectrum, too. Sometimes I think when there's a crisis, we all sort of rush to put out the fire. We bring all of the water to the fire, which we need to do. But we also need to make sure that the fire hydrants down the block and across the street all have water, too, so that as people are first exhibiting needs and supports, we can react quickly and promptly, so we don't end up over here. That's how we stop this train, because at this point, we're running down a track, like you said, Representative, that is intense. And we have to figure out how to address the stop at that end, but also how to slow it down for the future of our state. And so I'm so excited about this step, and I'm excited about the work that we've done previously and the work that Chair Fisher is doing and the work that others are doing to address the spectrum. Because we can't focus on just one area. We have to do the whole thing. So thank you so much, Representative Edelson.
With that, I just wanted to say thank you so much for your commitment, and also to the stakeholders and the task force who give us the list of things that we need to prioritize. Your closing remarks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Hicks. I think actually what you said should be my closing remarks, because I think the reality is there's a lot of things that happen before you get to civil commitment, and our state has tried to invest in those. Of course, I would love to see our rates increase this year. I don't know that we're going to have the money to do all of them. But what we're talking about here is when you get to the end. We do have engagement in here, which I think Ms. Everholden will, if we can pass that, will celebrate. She's been talking about that for years. Having that engagement before you even get to civil commitment is really important. We need to get people through these systems where they're not stuck in the state facilities. I will just go to speak to the preliminary fiscal note. I think some of this is scalable. Increasing capacity, whether it's 10% or 20%, I think there's a lot we can do. And Representative Newbrinley, I think you bring up a really good question, and I thank you for that, is how do we do that in a way that is actually going to get results? And so you have my commitment that is important, and I think everybody here, the sheriff, the counties, Ms. Everholden, DHS, DCT, can all agree that we are all working to address in a meaningful way where we are going to get those results. Nobody wants people to sit in ambulatory restraints in a hospital without fresh air. Nobody wants sheriffs to try to navigate being mental health clinicians. They're not trained for that, and people don't belong in jail. So this is at the very end of the road, Representative Hicks, like you talked about, and these people still deserve humanity. And so we will try to scale this fiscal note. Mr. Chair, you have my word on that. This bill is being heard in the Senate next year. And I really do hope and intend that we will get something done on this year. So thank you.
Thank you so much. With that, I will renew my motion that House File 4366 as amended to be laid over. So the bill is laid over. Thank you so much. The next bill we have is House File 4426, Chair Prime. Chair Prime moves House File 4426 to be laid over.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Please introduce the bill and proceed.
All right. So last year, one of the things that we did do was to come up with ideas to address the critical workforce shortage that we have for PCAs and also for personal care assistants and also for direct support professionals. And one of the ideas that we had came from people that needed these services. And they knew that time after time they were having trouble finding anybody to do these jobs. And so the idea was we need more people. We need more people out there so that we can get the high level of service that we need to keep people independent and in their homes and living their fullest lives. And they had an idea that wouldn't it be great if we could connect post-secondary students that need jobs, need part-time jobs, and give them that experience of working as a PCA or a direct DPS. And then, you know, that can open up their ideas about career in healthcare. You know, whether they continued on with those particular jobs or went into nursing or became physicians or any other wonderful career opportunities that we have in healthcare. And so the bill that we passed did that. It was funding that kind of connection. But also we added to it this idea that it's a pilot program and we should be able to evaluate the success to see if this is something that we should continue, that we could add funds to, because we don't want to support things that don't work. So that was the hiccup, though, was that to get that great kind of evaluation of the pilot program, it needs a little extra time. So it's a very simple bill asking for an extension to get that contract so that we can evaluate our pilot program and keep this program going, get it fully launched in a way that will be credible and can be a source of future information for this committee and the legislature. So I will turn it over to my testifier to give the details and tell you more.
Jespeth B. Gomez, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Chair Noor, members of the committee, Representative Pryor, thank you for your support of this effort. I'm the executive director of Metropolitan Center for Independent Living. We have the great honor of working with disability communities in bringing this pilot forward. We're excited about working. We're grateful to DHS on this. It's just taken a little bit more time to develop this, to get this going. But I want to say this, is that when we're reaching out to the universities, to the colleges, we are reconnecting universities to be a part of solving the urgent care crisis that we face in the state of Minnesota for people who need PCAs. So we're thrilled about this. We hope you support this, and we're very excited about the possibilities of what this means of making that connection with college students who then serve as PCAs, who then look at the opportunity of their career path and having a mindfulness in support of people with disabilities. And we're very grateful, Representative Pryor, for your support of this as well. Thank you.
Thank you so much. If you could state your name for the record.
Jesse Bethke Gomez, the Executive Director of Metropolitan Center for Independent Living.
Thank you so much. Any member discussions? Seeing none, your closing remarks, Chair Pryor.
Thank you for this opportunity. This is a no-cost, just an extension, a change in date. Thank you.
Chair Pryor renews her motion that House 54426 to be laid over. The bill is laid over. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
The next bill is House File 3654. Representative Robbins. Welcome to the committee. I will move that House File 3654 be laid over. Please introduce the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. It's nice to be in your committee. This is a simple bill that has broad bipartisan support and support of the stakeholders. And it was brought to me by my constituent, who you will meet in a moment, who had has her father. I'll let her tell her story. But basically, when correction orders are issued by the department to assisted living facilities, the statute does not require them to take. It requires them to take the corrective action. It does not require them to tell families what the correction action was, and that has been very frustrating for families in my district. Ms. Tess is one example, but she is representing many other people who have contacted me on this, and so it was kind of stunning to me. And she did everything right. She went to the ombudsman for assisted living. She went to the department. Like, before she got to me, she had been through every process a citizen should go through to try and get help. And they kept saying, we don't have to say what we're doing to correct it because it's not in statute. Statute doesn't require us to tell you what we've done to fix this. And so she came to me and she said, well, apparently it's the statute's problem. What are we going to do? So this idea comes from Tess. It's very simple. We did work with the stakeholders to make sure that it wasn't a huge new paper requirement for the assisted living providers. We understand that they are short-staffed and have a lot on their plate. But I think in many ways this will help because families will have the peace of mind of knowing that correction action was taken and what it was. So it's a simple bill. I think it solves a big problem for families. And I'd like to introduce my testifier.
Tess Minkema, if that's correct. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
My name is Tess Minkema, Chair Knorr and members of the Human Services Finance Committee. Thank you for this opportunity to share my story. In December of 2020, my dad moved into what is considered by many to be one of the best care facilities in town. He had just turned 82, and I was relieved to know that Dad would be safe and cared for at this assisted living facility. Several months later, the Department of Health completed an inspection of the facility. I found the report, and from it, I counted 13 violations of statute that the department determined had the potential to harm a resident's health or safety. The report included a column for the facility's violations and another column for the provider's plan of correction. Rather than a plan of correction, however, the column read, there is no requirement to submit a plan of correction for violations of Minnesota state statutes. It seemed that the facility was significantly out of compliance, and I had no way of knowing whether or not these violations had been corrected. I was worried that Dad's health, safety, and well-being were very much at risk. When I reached out to the Department of Health to inquire about this, I was told that facilities are required to write a plan of correction. They just don't have to submit the plan. I contacted the assisted living facility itself, the Ombudsman for Long-Term Care, Kristen Robbins, and other representatives of the legislature for assistance. I was still unable to get a copy of any correction actions. How was I supposed to know whether or not these serious violations had been corrected? Where was the accountability? As of December 2023, the cost for Dad's rent and services exceeded $250,000. I believe that providing quality care and a safe environment for our loved ones is invaluable. Minnesotans that pay for these services should at least be able to have peace of mind knowing that their loved ones actually are in a setting that is safe and caring. I am asking for your support of HF 3654. This bill makes a facilities plan of correction available so that all families will be able to know whether or not their loved one is in a safe place. This bill provides accountability and peace of mind to families while not placing additional burdens on providers. I humbly ask for your support of this bill. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Ms. Minkema, and also sharing that with us. I appreciate it. The next person I have on the list is Erin Hupen and also Angela Guerin, if you can both come close by and please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Erin Hubert with the Long-Term Care Imperative. I will briefly start testimony and then turn things over to my colleague who will complete our remarks. Representative Robbins and her testifier indicated, we do believe that House File 3654 represents a fair balance of consumer transparency and provider capacity. We are very much appreciative of the collaboration and cooperation in working on this bill over the summer, and we very much appreciate your willingness to listen to assisted living providers in this process. So I'll turn things over at that time. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Please introduce yourself to the record and proceed.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Angela Guerin with Care Providers of Minnesota, here today on behalf of the Long-Term Care Imperative. While the requirements in the proposed bill will be new for assisted living, this is something that's already required in nursing homes, and we don't have any concerns with the bill as it's introduced. We appreciate the opportunity to work over the interim and come to the table with a bill that all stakeholders are on board with. So thank you for your time.
Well, thank you so much. Do we have anyone in the public who wants to testify on this bill? Seeing none, member discussions. Representative Snicker.
Thank you, Chair Norrie. Thank you, Representative Robbins, for bringing this bill. And I think that the transparency will help the industry. As a 30-year nursing home administrator, we did this in nursing homes. And then as an assisted living operator, a plan of correction has always been part of the process, just like the nursing homes. And so I'm not sure why the law was written that way, but it was. And so I think this gives families what they need to have a baseline of to know that things have been taken care of for their loved ones. And so I appreciate what you've done. Thanks.
Well, thank you so much, Representative Robbins, for bringing this bill forward. Your closing remarks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. It's really a simple bill, but I think it will bring a lot of peace of mind to families, and it has the support of the stakeholders, so I ask that you would include it in your omnibus. Thank you.
Well, thank you. I'll renew my motion that House File 3654 be laid over. The bill is laid over. The final bill for the day is House File 4705. Representative Bliss. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce your bill and proceed with your testimony. And I see you have got an A1 amendment, so I will move the A1 amendment. If you can briefly describe your A1 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's actually, it is the A1, but it functions as a DE. We understand the limitations of the targets this year. Unfortunately, we have Beltrami County that owes quite a large sum of money, and Beltrami County is probably the poorest county in the state, with a tax base of only 20% of the land in the county is taxable. So we felt it very important that we get this one done this year, and we will work on the ones the rest of the state next year. That's my amendment.
1 second, let me get the copy of the amendment. I don't know. I think it went to the other packet. I just wanted to correct its A24 amendment. So I moved the A24 amendment. Any discussions from members? Jeff Fisher.
Thank you, Chair Norr. Representative Bliss, thanks for bringing it forward. I know that your original bill was what we really needed to take a look at addressing this system entirely. What's important for that I realize is that in many counties, they're not as rich in land as some of the metro counties are. Examples, my county, Ramsey, you know, about a third of the third of the properties off tax rolls, but we got places like 3M, et cetera, that help make up for part of that. In the northern parts of the state, we've got large areas of forest land, et cetera, that takes land off the tax rolls, and as a result, makes it a lot tougher. And I know you and I didn't have a chance to talk before for this, and I know you were trying to reach out. One of the things I'm hoping for is, as we're seeing counties doing this type of thing, putting the money back in, is what I'm really hoping is that as these kind of provisions are being done, is that more is being done to help foster relationships out there. I know up in the different parts of that parts of the state, there are other tribal governments that can help provide and do some of these type of things. And I would hope is that as if this goes through, that these kind of things that may be able to be wiped off can be used to also to help support efforts with forging better partnerships with the tribal areas up there who could help provide co-provide some of the services up in the air, which would reduce overall the other costs that they may be facing in that area. And that's one of the things I would hope that as these things are moving forward, that we see more development on those kind of partnerships, not only with other nonprofits or other county units, but also keep in mind that we've got our tribal nations up there, and I know that in some of the counties they've been able to form some of those great partnerships where they're doing dual services together, and it'd be great to see, dollar savings that are coming out of the mental health area here being used in conjunction with the tribal nations to help build a more robust system up in that part of the country, county. So I just kind of want to put that out there for thought as these discussions continue forward.
Well, thank you so much, Chair Fisher. Any further discussion from members? Seeing none, all those in favor of adopting A24, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Say nay. The A24 amendment is now adopted. To your bill as amended, Representative Bliss.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm going to let my testifier go into the details, but overall it's that the counties were being charged for something that they had no control over. I think you're all aware of this issue. And Beltrami County had a particular issue that my testifier is going to speak to a little bit, so I'll pass it on to her. Thank you.
Director Linsett, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and committee members. Thank you for having me today. My name is Ann Linseth. I'm the Director of Health and Human Services for Beltrami County and representing Beltrami County with my testimony today. So as you know, prior to July 1 of 23, counties were billed at 100% of the cost of care when a mentally ill and dangerous individual no longer met medical criteria for hospitalization but could not be moved to the appropriate state level of care due to a variety of reasons. Counties were, and honestly still are, completely powerless to move individuals to those appropriate care settings, but before July 1 of 23, we received that bill at 100% of the cost of care while awaiting that appropriate bed placement. In 2002, Beltrami County was billed $336,680 for one individual who was stuck at Anoka Metro Regional Treatment Center awaiting a bed at St. Peter. This represents almost 200 days waiting for an appropriate level of care, during which time Beltrami County had no authority to move the individual, but was assessed all responsibility for those costs. While awaiting appropriate placement, Beltrami County staff was in frequent contact with Direct Care and Treatment at a variety of levels advocating for appropriate placement. And I do think we worked very cooperatively to do everything in our power to get the individual into the appropriate bed placement. There are a lot of examples across the state, which many of you have likely heard about last session, and you did agree that this was an undue burden to county budgets. And in Beltrami County's case, there really is a scarcity of resources to cover this cost. The examples from last session were specific to MIND cases. The fact is, this occurs with many individuals who need that level of care that can only be provided at the state level by Direct Care and Treatment. And as you heard earlier by Commissioner Clark and others, they testified there's a great need to strengthen that mental health continuum of care. And this is just a piece of that, of strengthening that continuum. Unfortunately, Beltrami County has the second highest rate of poverty in the state, and very little of our land mass is taxable. which you heard as well. We do not budget, nor do we have any contingency funds to cover the astronomical costs for this one individual who became stuck in this inappropriate level of care and costs that this legislature has agreed is not the responsibility of counties. I thank you for the work that you've already done to end the practice, the unfair practice for counties. And it's a huge step in the right direction in supporting counties and working towards the significant investments needed in the mental health continuum care. So in closing, I just want to say Beltrami County strongly supports this legislation and its amendment. So if there's any questions, I certainly will stand for them at this time.
Do we have anyone in the public who wants to testify on this? I see Commissioner Clark. Welcome again. Please introduce yourself and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Terrell Clark, Association of Minnesota Counties and Stearns County. Just very quickly, on behalf of AMC, we support this bill. It is one example, a really hard example for a county for whom these costs are just astronomical. And as you're thinking about it, this is exactly why we're trying to deal with the broader situation. But looking back for that past year, that's just not the way our budgets work. Most counties don't have the resources to be hit these big hits that keep taking place. For the individuals, as many of you said, that are involved, it's just critically important that they're getting the care they need. And if you have any questions.
Oh, thank you, Commissioner. Do we have any member discussion on the bill? Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Bliss, thanks for bringing this reminder to us that we should have had money left on the bottom line for this, because this is a really important thing. And as Ms. Clark just said, there's a lot of other counties just like yours that have some very unequal expenses that they're dealing with at no fault of their own.
Right.
So again, we're trying to deal with it. Rep. Edelson is really working hard on that same kind of an issue. We know it's an issue, but we need to keep reminding ourselves why this is here in front of us. But these are the folks we got to work on. So I just want to say thank you to the director for being here, making the long trip down for this important message. So thank you.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, thank you so much, Representative Bliss, for bringing this bill forward. Your closing remarks.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Committee. I appreciate the consideration. Thank you.
With that, I'll renew my motion, House File 4705 as amended, to be laid over. So the bill is laid over. Members, we don't have any further discussions or agenda items. We are now.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Baker.
Just a question, Mr. Chair. Thank you. We had a little discussion earlier about where the money is moving around in different committees. As the first bill we heard today, the reimbursement increases are moving to another committee. I think they were part of Rep. Fisher's bill that I think is sitting over in the health side of things right now. I'm concerned with that because it has a very small target, and maybe I could have an update on at least where that is sitting, and that one along with sort of those other critical items. But again, just to know your authority, Mr. Chair, are you just focused on DC&T and 1115 waivers? Is that where this committee is really honing in on the dollars that we're looking at, and then everything else is over on the health side? I just want to clearly understand who's got what authority and jurisdiction.
I'll start with Chair Fisher, and then I'll respond to the other question.
Thank you, Chair Nora, Representative Baker. Great questions. Basically, the bill that we had, my 3495 that we sent over to the health department, basically the areas that we had the mental health component, which covers a lot of things. There were some things that also covered there was a little bit of crossover on some of the SCD things. There are some provisions that you had in your bill that went over. Right now, I know the policy things that we're working on right now, we just got some TA from the department that came late last night, so we're taking a look at those. Dollar things, we put together what it would take to build out the system. So I will qualify by saying is that when we were working with the Mental Health Legislative Network, we took a look at the rate study that just came out for the mental health rates and all that type of thing, is what it would take to get us up to paying the cost, just covering the costs out there. When we put that in, that is $750 million to be able to build out. So what we're talking about a substantial investment that would take to get it up. This reminds me of when I first started years ago, where we were with the nursing home system 10 years ago, and where we were with PCAs and all that, where we needed to make billions of dollars of investments to build out those systems. That's what we're looking at here when we're talking about the mental health and SUD dollars, is we need large dollars, and it's going to take a number of years for us to be able to bring those dollars up. I'm just being real upfront with what it's going to take to build out the thing. This is something that we're just going to have to continue to take swipes at every biennium as we go forward. It's just a very expensive process, because I think a lot of it goes to the philosophy that we've had as a society for so long, is that mental health was, you just weren't pulling yourself up by the bootstraps. Mental health had so many stigmas around it. We did not address that. And as a result, we just let things go by the wayside and did not realize how poorly we were treating that system. You know, we've heard from NAMI and the experts out there, the problem is we took apart a system and never built the new system because we did not give it the due respect it needed. We did not consider it as a regular mental health, and so as a result, we have fallen quite far behind. That's why we have problems attracting people in to do the work, because they don't get the rates out there. We don't have parity built. If you take a look at the same training in the medical system and what you get paid there, and the same training in the mental health system, you don't get paid the same thing. So as a result, you've got people going in different directions. And so we've got some large issues that we are looking at. I did meet with Chair Liebling just before this meeting here, talking about the tough issues. You know, we've got very limited dollars. Where can we get the best bang for the limited dollars that we have out there to help continue to build out the system? You know, what helps is we've got a lot of policy things that can help streamline and make efficiencies out there. Those things we can move forward. But the real big lift is we need large dollar amounts to build out the system, to pay for the services, to keep the group homes out there. You know, we've heard about the, you know, what we need to do in Department of Direct Care and Treatment. We're not looking at things that are going to be a cheap fix. We're looking at things that are very expensive. Mm-hmm. And I'll stop there. I'm just being upfront with what I'm seeing right now.
And if I could just reply to that, Mr. Chair.
Representative.
Thank you. I don't disagree, but nobody's asking for the 68% increase in reimbursements that study shows. I know that. But we were looking for something very small that should have been in last year's budget that we all saw got removed at the very end. Mm-hmm. So as ornery as I've been looking lately, it's because we should have done it last year, and it was there last year. Somehow it got pulled out. What I'm just fighting for is what was supposed to be there last year to get in this year. Mm-hmm. So it's not the big grand number that you're talking about right now, Chair Fisher. And we need to keep the realistic approach of wherever that lands. Again, we're not going to have our treatment facilities out there available to help people when we get them out of incarceration and other places. They're not going to be there if we don't just give them that 3% now. I've been asking for a fiscal note on that. I still haven't gotten one. So you've gotten something in front of you. I wish I could get something like that. I don't know what it's going to cost. And so I'm just worried about the dollars that have been allocated and targeted to certain committees. I'm worried that there mm-hmm. never is enough. I get it. But there was last year. There was enough last year to go around. And I just wanted to know what our focus this year is of this committee, Mr. Chair, is if it's really just focused on DC&T, you know, and the 1115 waivers and those kind of things, if that's really what your understanding is.
Representative Becker, we're looking at everything that we have discussed in this committee. We don't have yet a bill to discuss in terms of what the priorities for this committee will be. Surely we'll work with you and everyone to make sure that we all come together on that by the end of next week.
Keep us informed, if you would, Mr. Chair. Again, I know it's a lot, but we can't keep track of the jurisdictions and where things are moving. That's a hard thing to follow in this group. So thank you.
With that, we're now adjourned.